Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Gals of Geekdom podcast. I am your lovely host, Crystal Williams, and I'm here with my equally lovely co-host, Jazzy. Say hi.
Hi, I'm Jazzy.
And today we have a very special episode. As you can tell, Lizzie is not here with us today. She is on vacation, but that will not stop us from doing a very special episode that I've been wanting to do for some time, ever since we added both Lizzie and Jazzy to our show. I wanted to do something called Meet the Gals, and this is going to be the spotlight where I ask Lizzie, sorry, Jazzy here. You both have Izzy names. I ask you a bunch of questions sometimes, and then we just also just ramble off into the ether of podcast land, where we go off into tangents about Yakuza again. Let's, I guess to start off the show, I will ask a question that I'm actually going to bring back from the gals of before we get into like the more like nitty-gritty of Jazzy. I wanted to go back into Gals of Geekdom tradition we used to do. We used to do on every episode some called What Are You Watching? Slash reading slash whatever. So, Jazzy, what have you been watching, reading, killing? What? I didn't say killing.
Killing. What kind of life do you think I live?
A pretty crazy one at that.
Currently, I've been kind of split between watching two things. One thing with my girlfriend and one on my own. I've been showing my girlfriend the Harley Quinn series that DC has been doing. And I've been watching Xena Warrior Princess on my own time again to display another example of how behind on pop culture and TV I am.
What are you talking about? Xena Warrior Princess came out last year.
Fair enough.
Right?
Isn't it
Oh, wait.
amazing how it just came from nothing? It wasn't like it didn't come from a show that starred a horrible person.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're 100% right. Xena's badass.
Yeah.
And so is Lucy Lawless.
Yep. I mostly in terms of what I've been playing, I just finished my second playthrough of the Mass Effect trilogy via the Legendary Edition.
Nice.
And now I'm going to play one of my favorite RPGs of all time, Ni No Kuni, via the remastered version, which came out like a year or two ago, but I haven't gotten to.
That's the Studio Ghibli
Yeah, Studio
game,
Ghibli
right?
did the animations for it, yeah.
Cool.
And character designs as well.
So it's amazing from your
Yeah.
perspective. Cool.
Absolutely.
Maybe I
Absolutely.
should,
I'm already a big JRPG fan, so just putting Studio Ghibli into the mix and Joe Hisaishi, who's a composer who's done pretty much most of Ghibli's filmography at this point, for the soundtrack, also does the soundtrack for this game, so.
That is super cool. Actually,
So you
you're
have
selling the game
you
up.
have so you have an RPG, one of my favorite genres. You have Studio Ghibli, which is like my favorite animation studio, and you have Joe Hisaishi, who did my favorite film soundtrack of all time in the form of Spirited Away.
That's a gorgeous film and a gorgeous soundtrack.
Absolutely.
But I can say that a lot about Ghibli's films, just in general. Like, most of them knock it out of the park. Let me add to this question. I know this is about you, but damn it, I want a little bit about me. In terms of what I've been watching, I finished Harley Quinn season 2, finally. It took me a while, but I did it. I've been playing the Avengers game that came out last year, which I'm having a lot of fun with, honestly.
Oh, good.
I saw some mixed things about it. I got it cheap, and I was like, well, I like Avengers, and I also like Kamala Khan, just
Yeah, I
doing
hear
some
if you
mis.
get it cheap, it ain't so bad, so.
It's a good story. It's got great performances in the characters. It's well done in that regard. All the voice actors are super talented. I mean, you got like You got a Nolan Troy Baker, I think, is in that, and just I don't know, it's like the who's who of video game voice acting.
Right.
And I think in terms of other things I've been watching, I've been watching HBO's Mare of Easttown, which is a murder mystery drama, like, but HBO's quality in terms of like film production, so it's like high quality. It's good. I recommend it. It's one of those shows that like it's not gonna make you feel good, but you're just gonna be fascinated with it if you like that sort of television. Oh, duh, I've been watching Loki. I don't miss an episode of Loki.
I still need to watch it.
This is good. I don't, well, to be fair, I don't miss an episode of any of the Marvel shows.
Right.
I make it a point to see it every week because people are stupid on Twitter and they like
They
they
like spoil
spoil
like
it.
everything.
So yeah, because I like I what I do is that like, you know, I work and then like I look forward to at the end of the day after I'm done with work, I watch the show, but people watch it the night before at midnight or whatever, and I'm like, and then they spoil it immediately on Twitter. Did you see this thing that happened in Loki? No, it just came out 2 minutes ago. Shut up.
You wonder how these people are so quick to fucking watch it, like,
They just wait.
right?
Like, they just have the app open and they just wait to reload it and then they watch it. And I'm just like, I mean, I get it. I get being excited, but like, you gotta be careful what you post on Twitter. Like, especially with streaming stuff, you know? That's crazy. So be careful of Twitter. Gallows fans, be careful of Twitter when you haven't seen the popular show.
Pretty much, yeah.
So what are you gonna do? Anyway, that's my rambling tangent. Oh, and I'm going to start watching again for the second time, and I know you like anime. And I'll bring it up. I'm gonna watch Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex because I bought it on Blu-ray.
I still need to watch Standalone Complex. I've only seen the original movie, so.
I adore the original movie, and I adore the show just as much.
Yeah, I've heard the show's pretty fucking amazing, so I might need to watch it at some point.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool mystery show with a lot of character depth and good voice acting in the English dub. I don't know about the
Yeah, I
Japanese
really like
version,
the
but
movie. I got a limited edition steelbook version like a couple years ago. That was
I think I have that same one actually.
Oh, nice.
I love the original film. I think it's a masterpiece, if I'm being honest.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, just like every time I watch it, I pick up something that I like that I miss, you know, from the previous viewing. I'm like, oh, that connects to that. Oh, that's doing that. I don't know. I love the symbolism and the depth, and then I also realized that maybe my love of Ghost in the Shell as an anime has something to do with the fact that they're all cyborgs who can kind of switch ghosts or bodies. And I'm like, oh yeah. I can see why I loved that when I was getting into anime.
Well,
Like,
it's funny because The Matrix took inspiration from that movie. In
it
fact,
did,
when the
absolutely.
Wachowskis were pitching it, they basically showed the movie to the producer and they said, "We want to do that, but it's like a live action movie, like our own movie." And when you consider The Matrix is more or less a trans metaphor, everything starts to click together.
Yeah, everything fits nicely together, and be, you know, as much as the Chuds would hate that, I mean, what are you gonna do? They already hate us, probably. I don't know. I don't think they found us quite yet on our show. I'm surprised we didn't get more pushback from Kaylin being on.
I'm surprised too. Like I actually kept a decent eye. This is the only time I've ever done this. I kept a decent eye on the Kiwi Farms forums to see if they're.
I looked a little bit just out of curiosity, but I didn't see anything. Maybe they just haven't found us yet.
Yeah, probably not.
It's gonna be a year later, they're gonna find the episode, listen to it, and get mad.
Well, it's funny because, like, a lot of them are pulling up this tweet from a couple years ago from Funimation. And it was the one that where they announced that they were ending their business relationships with Vic Mignogna. And, like, only now are people retweeting this going, delete this.
I guess the internet is only makes a post as relevant as it needs to be based on the emotions of the people who find that tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people can't read the date on it.
Yeah. It's so weird. Like, people are retweeting this like it was a recent thing when no, this came out close to when this whole thing started.
That's
like, no one can be bothered to read the dates on the fucking tweet.
It's the internet. No one can be bothered to read anything unless they want to read it. Or they read their own thing into it. So, I think I've experienced a little bit of that as a writer. You know, people going, why did you say this? I didn't. You can read the article.
Right.
No, that was not my words. That is your words interpreting based on a headline that you read that I wrote.
Mm-hmm. No. Like, I remember when I was when I was first doxed. This happened like a few months after that whole situation started. I remember they said I said things in regards to the Vic situation that they like had no evidence that I said. Like, they said I referred to him as a monster rapist, which I never did. I said he was a creep. And I said he was a creep and a potential rapist, but depending on who you ask.
This is true. You know, I think that's what most people who have been in our rational corner have thought about. They just call Vic a creep. I don't hear a lot of people throwing around, you know, rapist or, like, too much.
Mm-hmm. Like,
have you experienced that, or?
It's been a while since, like, that entire situation was, like, fresh on the internet's mind, so I don't fucking remember, honestly.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah. I don't.
And I don't know. I'm way past giving a shit at this point.
You know, it's funny. We were both in the midst of that whole thing around the same time, but I don't know if our paths ever crossed.
I don't think so, no. Like, because there were plenty of followers I got in that time, like, due to the fact that I spoke pretty heavily on the situation, so.
Hmm.
Like, honestly, if I had more followers at the time, I probably would have been in the same boat as folks like Mars Girl or Monica or Amanda Winley, because Amanda and Kaylin's tweets I responded to a lot during that situation, just because they had the most interesting shit to say about it, and I thought they had the most poignant shit to say about it, and since they weren't involved in a fucking lawsuit, they were probably among the only ones who could talk about it, and especially since neither worked for Funimation, and I understand that Funimation actors were most of them were trying to keep quiet at the time just because investigations were going on and shit, and I think most of them just wanted to move on with their fucking career, so.
Well, it seems like they have. I mean, as much as we talk about all this situation still, I think the only people really keeping it alive are, like, the Chuds.
Yeah, I think the podcast with Kaylin was the most I had talked about it in a while, so.
Yeah.
Just because if you're going to have a podcast with Mars Girl, I think it's kind of inevitable that topic is going to come up, so.
I agree with you, and, you know, we talked. You know, so our listeners know, I'm not going to say specifics, but we talked before we even did the episode, and we were like, Kaylin, are you okay with, like, if we bring it up, or do you not want to bring it up as much, or, you know, we're just going to go with whatever happens, essentially, but we want to make sure that you're comfortable, and she was totally comfortable, and I think it was really good of us to, obviously, to vet that for sure, but also, like, keep in mind that she had just released the video about, you know, the Screamy Broccoli Man.
Yeah, which is probably probably my favorite term for him now, so.
But no. Yeah, I think we're going to just go with that.
It's funny just how, when they were doxing me and just when they were saying shit about me, just how much about me they got objectively wrong. It was like, they said I was a failed voice actor when at the time of the doxing, I wasn't even trying to be in much voice acting at that point. I was just trying to figure out where my fucking life was going, so.
You know who's a failed voice actor?
The Screaming Broccoli Man. Yeah, I know, the irony of calling me a failed voice actor, when at least I haven't sued anyone who didn't want to work with me. Not that there are many people that I can think of who wouldn't want to, so.
Right.
Like, generally, when I've had people work with me, they're like, oh, God, I'm excited. I get to work with you. You always seem cool, so.
Yeah, a lawsuit like that is career suicide, to be honest. Like,
right.
Like, it definitely doesn't make any studio want to work with an
actor. It's the guaranteed way to make sure you go from probably never having a career again to definitely never having a career again.
What about that guy who was super popular in those animes in the early 2000s? Oh, wait, he sued the company that he was fired from. No, we're not going to deal with that.
Right, like, that says a lot to companies. It's like, if you know even the most basic about how these businesses work.
Right, and we're not even, we're not even, defending the corporate status of all this. It's just more, the reality of the situation.
No, obviously, Funimation's a subsidiary of Sony, and Sony's a giant corporation, and I am not one for giant corporations.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't do anything wrong in this particular situation.
Right. In this scenario, they actually probably did the best thing that they could do.
Right. And they followed everything rather... It was rather standard, honestly.
Yeah, it was just by the books. They followed every precaution and every rule they could. But... Of course, the fucking grifters have to take that story and go, it was a decimation, it was an attack, it was whatever.
But it's funny to me that a lot of the doxing focused on was the fact that I am a voice actor and that I am not, but I'm not that big of a voice actor. Like, I'm not in any major projects. And it's like, that doesn't fucking matter to me. I'm in projects and I'm getting paid, so that's what.
And you're happy doing those projects, correct?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. Just today there was that Kids WB short that someone released that I voiced the fucking sock in, so
that's fucking awesome.
And I had kind of forgotten I'd done that because I recorded that months ago, so I was like, so when it came up, it was like, oh, right, this was a thing I voiced in, and I had fun.
That's awesome. And I think this is a good transition point. Ha-ha. Uh-huh. A section I like, I don't have a name for, but it's just asking Jazzy here some questions. It's for fun. It's to get everyone to know you, get everything comfortable, and we'll have fun with these, and we can go off into any direction, obviously. But all right, so I wanted to ask you what was your initial, I would say, drive or attraction to the world of voice acting?
When I was a kid, I had DVDs of that were basically kind of, so when you think of DVDs of TV shows, you think just season box sets, but these were, what I had were basically just episode compilations. They were DVD compilations for SpongeBob, and I remember one of them in particular had a behind-the-scenes video that showed the actors in the booth and them recording specific bits of episodes. One was from the episode Texas, one was from Graveyard Shift, which was my absolute favorite episode ever at the time, so
I love that episode.
And there was something about seeing this in action that allured me, and it was something I wanted to do. I want to say it was around middle school, I started auditioning for small internet projects that would accept any stupid kid with a mic, which wasn't many. And I got in a few, They were fun, though they're kind of cringe, and it was clear that I was completely out of my league at the time. But as I've gone forward, I've taken classes, I've been in more stuff, and now I'm generally and now I'm at this point where I'm generally considered a professional among my peers, so.
And that is absolutely amazing. I am, you know, your story of, like, you know, seeing something when you were young and being inspired by that is also kind of similar to how I found film in a way. Like, in terms of, I think what brings us to our creative side, obviously it has to do with the personal, like, issues and problems that we're dealing with, but it also is just the love of the craft. Like, when I was younger, when I would watch movies that were introduced to me by my family, like, if I had the DVD thing, I would watch all the behind-the-scenes stuff. I would see everything.
Oh, absolutely. Another one I watched when I was older that really got me was, and this isn't done a lot for anime, but I remember Death Note had behind-the-scenes videos of the English dub voice actors. And it was pretty cool. Like, I remember seeing, like, Brad Swale as Light, Alessandro Giuliani as L, like, all of them, doing recording sessions. Nowadays, it's bittersweet to watch that one because that features footage of the late Kirby Morrow as Mikami, so. And, God, that was such a brilliant fucking talent lost way too early.
That's always a shame. Mm-hmm. There's always the people that, you know, come along and are amazing, and then they're just gone, you know?
Yeah, and I would like to do, like, that kind of work at some point, but I'm also in the position where it's not really the end of the world for me if I don't. I do, like, what I do now, which is, like, games and original animations and so forth, so. Like, I just kind of take the journey as it goes. I'll do what I can to pursue more opportunities.
Right. You're just going to take it, whatever you can get, essentially, and follow the path towards whatever makes you happy in doing so, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, the possibility of doing, like, I will never reject the opportunity to do an anime or something like that. If that happened, I would so be up for it.
That, you know what? I'm going to say it here. It's going to happen.
I've had people tell me it's going to happen, like, that I'm clearly working my ass off, and they can see it happening, and I would love it to happen, so.
Well, when it does, just don't forget about the little people you keep around you, like me.
I'm still going to be on Gals of Geekdom, don't worry about it.
I know, I'm just... and hopefully this show will be massive by then, right?
Mm-hmm. And once it reaches 1K... Oh, speaking of which, so, as some of you know, I did a post saying that if Gals of Geekdom gets 1K followers, I will watch the entire Twilight series. Guess what's coming to Netflix next month?
That's right, I saw that.
Yeah, it's like... So I'm just sitting there thinking, oh man, this would be a good time for Gals Geekdom to get 1K, because then I can watch them for free and I don't need to go out and get the fucking DVDs.
That, yeah. Honestly, the best way to see it. Then you don't have to pay for shit. You're just like, oh, look, Netflix.
I can just enjoy the cringe, so.
I don't blame you. And the incredible acting that happens in those movies.
Look, I've seen bits and pieces of Michael Sheen as the villain, and it's fucking hilarious, and I'm ecstatic for that.
As someone who's seen a few of those movies, moments like that are few and far between. I'll just give you that much.
I'm aware. Like, I'm aware they're pretty dull, but I am looking forward to select moments. I am going to say it's going to be fucking weird seeing Rami Malek in the final movie, so...
I completely forgot he was in that.
Yeah, he, from what, like, because I was watching the highlight reel for YMS's commentary on those movies, mm-hmm. and, like, I guess Rami Malek plays, like, the Avatar version of a vampire, because he can control the four elements.
Oh.
Which is funny, wow. Because Rami Malek played a minor character in Legend of Korra, so it all comes together.
That is right, he did. Mm-hmm. Rami's been around.
I've seen him in so much stuff, and it's weird to how I've seen his acting path go from, like, go all the way to Bohemian Rhapsody, which was, of course, the biggest thing he's known for at this point.
Right.
But like, I remember he was in a horror game called Until Dawn, and he was fucking fantastic in that.
He was. That whole cast was good in that, actually.
Absolutely.
That was a fun game. I've heard that the follow-up games, which I thought about playing, are disappointing.
Yeah, I've heard they're not very good.
Well, that's a shame, because the first one's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know? The first one was great. Like, it was just a horror movie as an interactive, made into interactive medium, so.
And it had some pretty talented cast members, and I don't know, it was pretty cool. I always enjoy, and I know it's like, I'm not trying to displace the talent of voice actors or whatever, but I do enjoy seeing people who are mostly on screen show
and
up
I
to
think
video
it
games
worked,
from time to time.
And I think it worked for this game, because they were trying to portray it as a movie, so.
Yeah.
Like something you could watch as something live action, so they got actors well known, mainly for television at the time. It was mainly television actors, so.
Was it, what's his name? From Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was... Brett, yeah. Is it Brett Dalton? Is his name?
I think so. Yeah,
Brett Dalton. Yeah, he was in that, and they had, was it Hayden Panettiere, right?
Yeah, Hayden Panettiere, which is funny, because, I forget the name of the actress, but Hayden Panettiere is well known for playing Kyrie in the Kingdom Hearts series, and one of the other actresses in Until Dawn plays the character Naminé in the same series. And if you know anything about fucked up Kingdom Hearts lore, Kyrie and Naminé are the same person.
Right. She was also in Heroes. That's where my mind goes first. Yeah. But yes, I completely forget that it's her in Kingdom Hearts. So I do have some other questions to continue this path. So you're obviously entering the world of voice acting, and like me, you care about certain things and care a lot about you know, your passion, your creativity, and like, how do you hope to change the industry that you're entering into?
The biggest hurdle for me personally in the industry is that the industry is not kind to trans people, and I am going to be rather blunt on that end.
Yeah.
Because I have heard stories from folks like Casey Mongello and Caden Jensen about how they've gone to professional casting calls and have just been kind of turned away at the door because they're like, oh, you're a lady, but you have the voice of a dude? How does that work? What do we cast you as? Fuck this. We're not even going to try.
I think it's amazing that you want to be like so vocal about this, because we both obviously deeply care about this. I feel like with any sort of marginalized identity, including trans and gender nonconforming people and non-binary and sometimes even just basic queer, there's a sense that from Hollywood and from at least from production companies that certain types of people won't sell. And I feel like that is such a bullshit backwards way of thinking about things.
Right.
Know? This is not related to voice acting in a way, but it does relate to the film industry, which voice acting is very much a part of. I do know that I was listening to a podcast with Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he was talking about the journey of how it went from In the Heights from the stage to the screen, and how the only way that, well, first off, a show like that wasn't destined to be a hit. They got lucky, essentially, because it was all the Latino cast, and, you know, there's no white characters in that play, and there's no white characters in the movie, right? So it was, one, amazing to come out in the time that it did that even became a hit, but Hollywood saw that as an opportunity. And at the same time, Hollywood was like, well, the only way we can make this movie is if we get some internationally known Latino superstar singer, right? And that, in a way, kind of closed the door to a lot of, like, the potential, mm-hmm. and the budget was small. So I feel like in that little microcosm of that little story, we do see the idea that marginalized groups and people to Hollywood can only be seen as a commodity if they can see be made profit from. And I think your way of wanting to change the industry and be you is amazing, but I also hope the industry realizes that, you know what, with you being successful, I know you're going to get into something super cool. And maybe, just maybe, your inclusion will lead to more anime studios or animation studios going like, hey, this trans person's doing X and doing well. Mm-hmm. Maybe we won't have to be so scared and of losing profits or not gaining to the same notoriety or whatever.
Well,
do you know what I'm saying?
There are currently trans and non-binary voice actors within the industry trying to open up those gates. Like, you have Casey Mongiello, as I mentioned earlier. I believe Kira Buckland, if I'm not mistaken, has also been trying to open up opportunities for a more diverse array of talent, including trans and non-binary individuals.
Yeah, no, which is incredible.
Which makes
sense.
They're
doing great work.
She comes for, like, her beginnings came from doing a lot of fan works, and now she's in shit like anime games and so forth. So,
well, that is incredible.
So I think just coming from that background, like, she knows the struggle, she knows the hurdle. So I think it kind of, in a way, it's, I think in that way, she wants to help open the door now that she's in, so.
Which is great. I think there's a point when, you know, us, we have to keep the door open, per se. If mm-hmm. we can get our foot in, we gotta, like, take that door and fucking slam it open. Like, and mm-hmm. hold it open, while others may try and close it. So, and I think it's awesome that you want to be another force for change. So, and I think we're doing good work here on Gals, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if there's a whole lot of trans related geek shows out there.
Fair.
So I think we're carving a good path. Well, so the next question I do have, and this is a lot less of heavy, and I wanted to steal this from James Lipton himself. He would ask this to his celebrities on his show. What's your favorite curse word?
Fuck. It can be used in so many situations.
That is a good guess. I was on another podcast, which has yet to see, but it will at some point, where I was asked the same question, and I responded with motherfucker. Because I think that's a really good one.
That is a good one. But I think just general fuck as an umbrella word is...
right. It covers them the same space.
And, like, it's, like, the worst... But the worst thing about it is it's the worst one to so many people. I mean, except for Kant. I think that one's considered far worse, but...
It depends on where you are. Here, it's considered far worse. In, like, the UK, it's just kind of like another word.
Right, like, because to go back to the Harley Quinn series, characters say fuck all the time, but they'll bleep out cunt, so.
I also think that was for creative choices, in a way, to make it funnier.
Yeah, it does make it funnier, so.
And I think, yes, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of another show of great voice acting, right? The Harley Quinn animated show?
Oh, absolutely.
Comedic talents all around, giving, mm-hmm. like, great performances.
And it's one of the few cases of adult animation with decent queer representation.
Yes. Oh, man. I think this is a topic we need to talk about, because we talked about this on Twitter, and I shared your tweet.
Right.
But Q-Force is a thing.
Yeah, it is. And I'm actually in the process of writing a potential video essay on this because the subject fascinates me. Because I feel, animation made for general audiences or children have actually been starting to get a decent ball rolling in terms of queer rep, adult animation is kind of in a weird space where there is good rep, but it seems every other show it's drowned out by something shit. Like, cause,
yeah.
And I get it that most adult animated shows are comedies, and they're obviously going to go for stereotypes. Most adult comedies run on every character being a goddamn stereotype.
This is true. I feel like the vibe... I think your point of bringing up that, like, the animation, how children's animation or family animation just does it better than, like, the adult animation is because adult animation's mostly filled with a lot of edginess, you know?
It's, if they're doing queer rep, it's probably a sexaholic character in adult animation, so...
Right, or just a general stereotype.
And you can't really have a sexaholic in something meant for children, so...
Right, that's true, too, which is part of the sexualization of the LGBTQ community, you know? It's where our existence is considered... You know, sexual. While a straight couple.
A joke. And it's so weird to me because one of the showrunners for Q-Force, Sean Haynes, is queer himself.
Right. Of course.
So I'm sitting here wondering, why the fuck are you sitting here perpetuating stereotypes with little character, at least as far as the trailer goes?
Yeah. And, I'm curious to see how the reaction will be once it's actually released, but judging from that trailer alone, yikes.
One of the characters is named Twink, so I don't exactly have the highest amount of faith in it.
I do feel like that sort of comedy could work in a queer space, but I don't feel like telling it through Netflix in this way will be successful. Do you understand what I'm trying to get at?
Like, I mean, I've seen adult comedies where they have LGBT characters, and there is an aspect of kind of, like, this love of sex to them. Like, Viv Zipop, who does both Has-Been Hotel and Hell of a Boss, does this. Mm-hmm. But this is done well because the characters are still endearing, so...
Right.
Like, you have someone like Angel Dust, which... And keep in mind, I'm only speaking of my opinion. I understand that there are actual gay individuals who have issues with Angel Dust, but this is just from my perspective. Angel Dust is a character who does a lot of fuck. In fact, I think the character is implied to be, in some regards, a prostitute. But the character is still endearing. He's still a character, so...
And I'm with you on that. Like, I think you have to... You have to define your character not by those traits, but by who they are as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that tightrope of balancing between falling into the stereotypes versus, you know, actually making an engaging character is just can be difficult, especially in edgy comedy.
Right, and it's hard because, like, a thing I notice with both the Q-Force trailer and other cases of bad representation is that writers seem to think gay is a character trait, which it's fucking not.
No.
Gay is as much of a character trait as straight is, which is to say not at all.
I like the movie Freaky that came out this last year, mm-hmm. but their gay character was really a stereotype. Kind of almost pulled from the early 2000s of the gay best friend.
Mm-hmm. Like, if I were to use children's animation for an example, if I were to tell you the traits of characters like Adora or mm-hmm. Catra, or if we're going with a non-Shira show, Benson from Kipo, mm-hmm. I could tell you a lot of traits about these characters that don't involve their sexuality, so...
Right, I think I was going to circle around back to this point, but I think what makes the you know, children's animation and family animation work is a lot of those shows, their major themes are about empathy and understanding, and it's about, like, caring for one another. And I feel like when they do the representation of those shows, it's often done by people who are like us, who genuinely care about others. Are also queer, you know? that want the best for people. So I feel like those shows reflect that because of they're not outsiders looking in. They're us,
Right.
right?
And I think it helps that they do have queer creators who know what the fuck they're doing involved.
Exactly.
Like She-Ra's, most of She-Ra's writing room was pretty fucking gay, so.
Yes, this is true.
So when they were going with the idea of this show is going to end with lesbianism saving the world, they did it right, so.
Well, you
You
know,
laugh, but that is how the show ended.
it is, and you know what? It's accurate. Lesbianism is going to
But
save the
then,
world.
like, I think, though, Benson from Kipo is probably one of my favorite bits of representation because you find out so much about him, and he's kind of framed as if he is going to be the love interest.
A little bit.
And then you find out two-thirds to three-quarters of the way through the first season that he's gay, so.
And he outright says it.
Yeah, and it's not a punchline. And despite how it's presented, it's not really a punchline, so.
No, it's not a joke. It's just like, it's an actual in minor spoilers for Kipo, but it's an in scene character like reveal. And it's not a joke. I mean, maybe it's a little, that scene is a little comedic just because you understand what's going on, but
I'd
it's
say the
not
comedy is
laughing
more in the
at it.
fact that this reveal of a crush is kind of takes a 180, so.
Yeah, it's undercut very quickly.
Yeah.
And it works because that's how the characters feel. You know,
And
it's built up.
I'd argue Benson is the best character, so.
Oh, really? You know what? I love him too.
Yeah, Benson is fucking wonderful, so.
That show was wonderful. And as much as it'd be cool if that show continued, I also am kind of glad that it ended when it did and it has a resolution and stuff. Not spoiling it, but just if you watch it, you can actually feel good the way it ends. You know, it
Oh yeah,
ends.
I thought the ending was satisfying. I also thought it handled its redemption arc for the character of Scarlemagne extremely well because
You know, redemption arcs can be tricky. You
they
know,
can be.
it's
Like,
hard to really do it.
I love Scarlemagne's arc. I love Catra's arc from the new She-Ra, but I
Yeah.
fucking hate how Kylo Ren's redemption arc was handled in something like Rise of Skywalker.
I think my opinions on that is that I'm with you, that it was bungled a bit. But there's also scenes that I do like in Rise of Skywalker where if I feel like some of it works, but like I feel but the, I that's because I feel like Abrams is I think I know he gets a lot of shit, but I think Abrams is actually a talented filmmaker and
He is.
you know,
He's made good
he has
stuff.
ability.
I don't think
Yeah,
his
and
good stuff is discounted just because he made a movie. He made a couple movies I don't like, so.
right, exactly. That's with any filmmaker though, right? Or
Right,
creative,
right. Like,
right?
I can. There are, like, even some of my favorite filmmakers have made movies I didn't particularly care for, so.
Yeah, I'm I do really, even though obviously I understand the problematic nature of a lot of the work, I love Tarantino's work, you know,
Same.
like I think he's incredibly talented and fresh. And on the same flip note, I'm not a huge fan of Death Proof. I don't feel like that works as well.
Death Proof, I feel, is a film that works better if you're watching it as part of the Grindhouse double feature because it sets the mood better, honestly.
What I will say, what's interesting about that Grindhouse double feature, and I actually love that, even though I'm not as huge on Death Proof, I actually still like the movie. Like it's, I still think it's a pretty good movie.
Yeah,
But
I
what's
just,
so
yeah.
weird to me is that I've been wanting to talk about this a little bit for a while, is that Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror mixed with Tarantino's Death Proof is such a weird combination because Tarantino was making an actual Grindhouse style film. Like it was taking itself partially seriously, it was done in the style, it was actually crafted exactly like those films, while Robert Rodriguez, which I actually prefer his movie personally, is a parody. It's an homage to it, but it's a joke. Like the whole movie is a
The whole movie, yeah, no, the whole movie's a comedy. Like, it's...
So it's so weird to me, because it's like Tarantino was like, all right, we're doing Grindhouse. All right, I'm excited to actually make a movie. And Robert Rodriguez is like, I'm putting a gun on this girl's leg.
I'm going to make something fucking dumb.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I love Planet Terror. I actually think that movie's awesome.
I think both films just work well as, like, the double feature that just complement each other, just because I think Planet Terror sets the mood, and all these fake trailers just set the mood for Death Proof perfectly, and it just doesn't work. Death Proof just doesn't work as well as a standalone film. Like, I agree with you, Planet Terror is the better of the two, but that's probably because I can watch Planet Terror on its own and still enjoy it without, like, continuing on to the rest of the double feature, but...
Right, because Tarantino made an actual 70s exploitation film.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, you know?
I just like Death Proof for the chase scenes and
it's cool.
Kurt Russell being a evil badass, so...
I agree with you. It's awesome seeing him in that role.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the ending of that movie, too.
Oh, the ending's fucking amazing.
It's incredible. And I will also say this. I am also a fan of Machete. I love Machete.
I still need to see Machete.
It's good. The second one isn't as good, but there's some fun grindhousey parody things in it that make
it super
fun.
I just like this whole grindhouse series going on because it's just dumb films for the sake of being dumb, and I am A-okay with that.
I want another one.
Hell yeah.
I want them to do one more. But I know that's so out of it right now that they're not in that mind frame.
I just want them to make a full movie of that one with Nicolas Cage as Fu Manchu. That's all I want. I will pay money for that one.
There was rumors that the Thanksgiving one was going to be made by Eli Roth.
Mm-hmm.
But that never really came to fruition.
Right.
I don't know how that one would work. As I like the trailer for sure, but that one feels a lot more typical slashery, you know? Oh. Sorry, everybody. We just had a malfunction with the call, which is why it went awkwardly silent there in the middle of our conversation. But we will continue back with it. So, yes, I was talking about how Thanksgiving Day, whatever, Eli Roth was a rumor that he was going to make that, you know, that fake trailer into the full movie. But... that never happened. But that would have been a fascinating choice, even though it's not my favorite or the most comedically pleasing of that. And I will also say that everyone should watch at least the first Machete film.
Yeah.
Jazzy, if you see Machete, tell me.
Yeah, I'll let you know if I end up watching it. I probably will at some point. It's one I've been interested in seeing because it's funny because I grew up with the Spy Kids films and where Machete was a character in those, so.
Yeah. I mean, like, the character, obviously, but it doesn't feel the same character.
Right.
You know,
I figured, considering you're going from a PG-rated movie meant for children to an R-rated movie with lots of violence.
The only thing they share is a name.
Right.
It's just completely different regardless.
And the actor,
of course. Danny Trejo, who's amazing in it. That movie is very funny. Very gory. And the second one is weird. Machete, I think it's Machete Kills. I believe
yeah, I
it's what the
what
second
called.
One's called.
Yeah.
And that one has Lady Gaga in it. And Mel Gibson for some reason.
Yeah. Why does he keep getting movies?
I will say the best part of Machete Kills is the intro because it starts off with the grindhouse-y coming attractions sort of reel, where it's like da 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 da, you know.
Oh yes.
And then it shows you a trailer for the third film before you start the second one, and it's That's Machete amazing. Kills in space.
We need that. You can't just tease that and not. Do you know the gravity, Robert Rodriguez, of teasing something like that?
And the trailer was so stupid. It was absolutely hilarious and the perfect way to start that second movie. And I don't think they're ever gonna do it. It's funny if it's a joke and it just stays as the. It works as just a fake trailer. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fine. But part of me wants to see a stupid movie in theaters like that again. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, even if I wasn't as fond of the second movie in the series, I still had fun with it, which is saying a lot.
I think there's always room for just those movies you enjoy solely because they are fucking dumb.
This is true. I think we both have a good collection of films that we just love that are just fucking stupid.
I fucking adored the first Venom movie because it was really fucking dumb.
Yeah, that's the movie where I feel like a lot of people just enjoyed it purely for the camp of it, you know? Yeah, just
it's a dumb fucking movie, and it's like when people ask why I like it and say, dude, it is so fucking dumb, and I'm like, yeah!
Yes, and?
Yeah, it's like, you are explaining the reason why I like it, guys.
Your thought about, you know, trying to dissuade me is making me like it even more.
Right, like, I feel some movies, there are movies that have the potential to just be enjoyable on the dumb value, but then don't, like, I've always thought the original Suicide Squad could have been the dumb fun movie, but it wasn't, because it kept holding itself back from that.
This is actually going to be a slightly unpopular opinion, but I do enjoy the movie.
And that's fair. There's plenty to enjoy. I don't even think it's the irredeemable piece of trash that a lot of people claim it to be. Honestly, I prefer it to shit like Batman v Superman any day. Yeah.
I think that's maybe why I also really enjoyed it.
At least with Suicide Squad, there was a modicum of good ideas.
There was also some good jokes, to be fair. Good moments of comedy.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I think that's why I'm looking forward to the new one, because it seems to be just indulging on the fact that it's really fucking dumb, and James Gunn knows how to work with really fucking dumb concepts, so.
I mean, he's basically making Guardians of the Galaxy, but over at DC.
Yeah, and it's like, that's all it needed to tell me in order for me to be hyped.
Oh yeah, and then just getting an all-star cast along with it. Like,
also, Killer Shark is in the movie, the best DC character.
And?
Yeah, I'm Killer Shark. I'm between that and the Harley Quinn series and the upcoming Suicide Squad game, I am so happy Killer Shark is getting so much love. I don't even read comics. I just love his design.
Oh, he's great.
Like, no, a lot of comic fans ask, oh, it's like, what books have you read? Like, what do you like about him? It's like, I haven't read any comics. I just really like his design. He's cool.
He is cool. And knowing that he's voiced by Sylvester Stallone is just that weird icing on cherry on the top of the weird cake, you know?
Yeah, I also really love his voice actor in the Harley Quinn series. He did out. He was so good.
Oh, Ron Funches.
Yeah.
The dude's super funny. Super talented, has been in other things too. Quick shout out to G4 since it's coming back. He hosted the G4 reunion special they did with last year, where they brought all the original hosts back for it. So if you want to see a funny reunion special hosted by someone who's super talented, it's on YouTube right now. You can watch it.
I need to give it a look. There's a few things on YouTube I need to give a look. Like, there was apparently a symphony. There was apparently a symphony for Sonic's 30th anniversary. And I'm not the biggest Sonic fan nowadays, but I always enjoy the music, so.
Sonic the Hedgehog was the first game I ever played.
Nice.
So yeah, it's always in my heart, you know?
Sonic 2 was one of the earliest games I played, I know that, mm-hmm. so.
Well, Sonic 2 is a great game.
Oh, absolutely. I still play. Like, I think I can always go back to the Genesis games, Mania, and for guilty pleasure territory, the Adventure series when I'm just need something casual and fun, so.
Yeah, Mania is really good. Mania is really good, yeah. I am so glad that they did a newer game in that style.
Yeah, and I'm hoping like the adventure format gets the same treatment, like something made by fans, you know? Because the thing
Yeah,
about
that would be so
Mania is that it
cool.
was made by fans, so.
I had a Dreamcast, and I loved the Sonic Adventure games. I love them both.
Yeah, I got a Dreamcast specifically to play the original versions, and I will say, while I do prefer Dreamcast Sonic Adventure 1, I do prefer GameCube Sonic Adventure 2.
No, that makes sense. It was a few years after, and it was just they added more content and changed things around a bit. So, yeah.
I just think the overall graphical look of the Dreamcast SA-1 is more charming to me because when you polish up the models that look this bad by today's standards,
Right.
it just looks wrong that these models look so new, but their animations and mouth movement look so bad. At least with the Dreamcast version, everything looks jank, so.
Right, so your expectations are already low.
So the crude animations and lip sync don't feel as awkward.
This is true.
But
But
Dreamcast era voice acting's fucking hilarious.
this is true.
Most games on the Dreamcast had pretty bad voice acting. You had Sonic Adventure, which I don't think anyone will deny was a poorly voice acted game.
No, I don't deny that.
But you also have Shenmue, which I am one of the five people left on this earth that still like Shenmue, so.
Wait, people don't like it?
There are people who don't like Shenmue because it's kind of a slow, uneventful game, which I can kind of get, but it's why I like it because it's a point and click adventure game format in the style of kind of a more standard video game.
Right. I think
Plus
we've
the town is so lively. It has people with daily routines. This was revolutionary for the time.
I keep seeing the Shenmue 1 and 2 on sale sometimes on stores, and I've never played the games, so I have no expectations for it other than I just know it. And I used to watch G4 and XPlay all the time, and then they reviewed that game at least once or twice, and they made fun of it in the best way they could, but they also loved it too. So I've
Yeah.
always been curious about it,
It's
you
a
know?
game that is easy to make fun of because there's a lot wrong with it these days, but there's so much charm to it, and I love the voice acting because it is so undeniably awful.
That is amazing. Is it like, you
Well,
know,
the thing to know about Shenmue's voice acting is the English dubbing was done in Japan. And apparently, in the casting call, if you were an actor and you could speak perfect English, you were in the cast because they needed several. Like, every NPC in this game has a voice. Every NPC has conversations you can initiate with them.
Oh.
And they're fully voice acted. This
Wow.
was a big fucking game, keep in mind. And it was also the most expensive game ever made at the time, if I'm not mistaken.
Holy crap, wow.
So even if you might not think it's a good game, and I can understand for the arguments for why someone might not think it is a game that did so much that we kind of take for granted these days, and that's why I like it, so.
Yeah, there are definitely some games where I feel like the reasons why someone might hate it is like the reasons why somebody else would absolutely love it. Like the game I was thinking about, which has sort of a cult following that people might hate but also would love, is Deadly Premonition.
Yeah, I've heard Deadly Premonitions is kind of that in the same ballpark as Shenmue, so.
Yeah, and I've seen gameplay of it and it looks like really jank, but like the voice acting and the weirdness of it is such it's so charming because it's obviously really, really wanting to be Twin Peaks. Like
Well,
really trying.
yeah, the thing that's also charming about Shenmue is it's trying to be this grand epic story that spans multiple games. but the person making it can't tell a decent story, and the writing does kind of suck.
That's disappointing, though.
But it is the good kind of sucking, so not as the sexual way, but, like, it's terrible, but it's great. I would say the first two Shenmue games are pretty great in this regard. Shenmue 3 was a fucking disappointment.
Shenmue 3, was that on, what was that on, or, like, when did it finally come out?
Platform, so you can find it on PC, PS4, and Xbox One.
Huh. Okay, was it recent?
Yeah, it was a Kickstarter game, because keep in mind, there was, like, a 20-year gap between the release of Shenmue 2 and Shenmue 3.
Wow.
And Shenmue 3 was crowdfunded, and it is one of the most... I think it's up there with Mighty No. 9 in terms of a disaster of a Kickstarter.
Oh, jeez.
And the game is not even fun in how bad it is.
Like, okay, so what... As someone who does not know Shenmue, or Shenmue's stuff, what exactly makes it so specifically bad? Is it the bad storyline, or is it just, like, a boring gameplay, or is it all the above?
I can handle bad stories in Shenmue, because every Shenmue has a bad story.
Right.
I'm used to it. And I'm used to the story being mostly nothing happening and maybe an occasional reveal about the grand plot that even Tetsuya Nomura making Kingdom Hearts would wince at. No, the problem with Shenmue 3 is it wants to keep a similar style, archaic style to the original, while also taking many, many steps backwards. Like, the combat isn't as good. The combat isn't as good. The fact that your health and stamina are the same bar and that you lose stamina as you go throughout the day, which is bad, wrong. This is awful. This is awful. The first two games didn't do this and they worked fine.
Honestly, that sounds like me. My health and stamina are on the same bar. And I lose it a little bit every moment of the day.
English dub for this game is also weird because it was, unlike the first two, it wasn't done in Japan. It was done in California with Bangzoom, if I'm not mistaken, or one of those companies over there. And only one actor from the original games reprises his role, and that's the main character.
Mm-hmm.
So when his acting is stiff, I can believe that it was naturally stiff. The guy. Knows this, like, his performance as this character is a joke, and he's been running with it for the last two decades, which I love.
That's awesome.
But, like, everyone else is played by, like, big professional talent, but they're directed to read their lines to emulate a similar way to the Dreamcast games, which doesn't sound right because they're trying to sound bad. Like, the reason why the voice acting in the original two games worked. Yeah. The reason why the acting in the original two games worked is because they were trying.
Right. Okay. Like, now I completely understand what you mean. It's like if fucking Tommy Wiseau tried to make a Room Part 2, but was trying to be self-aware about it. And so actually.
With James Nguyen in Birdemic.
Right. Okay. In
Birdemic 2, he made a sequel and he tried to make it so bad it's good and it just didn't work.
Yeah, because there's a love to the bad movies that comes from the original creator of the work not knowing it's bad. You know, there's an authenticity to that that is charming, that if you try and recreate that, it becomes artificial.
Yeah, and that's how Shenmue 3 feels, because these are actors, I am aware, who know how to act. You have folks like Cam Clark, who has been acting for years. You have a lot of extras played by different recognizable talent, including Yuri Lowenthal, Johnny Young Vosh, KG Tang, Barbara Goodson. I know these people all can act, so it sounds weird when they're trying not to. It's so bizarre. In a way, I say Shenmue 3 makes for a good curiosity in that regard, because it's like, what would happen if all these very credible and talented voice actors tried to sound bad?
Jeez. It's basically a study in what not to do.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And that's why, even though I don't like Shenmue 3, I'm happy I own a copy. So.
Right, because it's just like a weird copy of gaming history.
It is gaming history, because it is a long-awaited sequel that people didn't think would come out. So.
I mean, that's kind of similarly how I feel about owning Duke Nukem Forever.
And that's fair, because there is an appeal to those games regardless of how they come out, so.
Yeah, it's definitely a piece of gaming sort of history and lore. You know, it's just, I don't know, it's just a fun thing to say you own, you know,
I think the other big thing about Shenmue 3 is that it ignores the fact that gaming has evolved since Shenmue 2, and it's like a lot of what Shenmue 1 and 2 revolutionized has just kind of become commonplace now.
Right.
Like, yes, it's cool that these janky-ass Dreamcast-era games have NPCs that run on different schedules for a long period of multiple in-game days. That is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not impressive now?
You can't pretend like it is impressive now.
Right, like, it's a game that has it. Like, yes, you still have the typical Shenmue stuff. The game runs on an in-game clock. There are multiple days. The NPCs have in-game schedules. But this is all stuff that have been done in other games. So
yeah, done.
And nothing that Shenmue 3 does is like remarkable in any way. And there are times where it almost works. Like, I think the Quick time events are fucking hilarious when you fail them. That's my favorite part of this game.
Is it like the Spider-Man 3 game?
Oh, absolutely. Shenmue 1 and 2 were the first games to utilize, I don't know if they were the absolute first, but they were one of the earliest games to use quick time events. And the fail states were usually pretty amusing. And I will admit that this is one aspect Shenmue 3 retains that they actually did well, because the QTE fails are fucking hilarious. One of the best ones is, like, you're chasing this group of thugs. One of them throws a fucking fire extinguisher at you, and if you fail to hit the button, it just bonks you on the fucking face, and it's great. And it's so cartoony in how it lands.
You're making me want to watch clips of that on YouTube.
I would recommend watching a QTE fail sequence. It's a compilation of Shenmue 3, because it's delightful.
You know what? I will definitely watch that then, based on your suggestion. I love stuff like that.
Right.
We went on to an interesting conversation with Shenmue there.
That's what it's like to have a conversation with me. I either go into Yakuza, Final Fantasy, or Shenmue, depending on the day.
Right, and having a conversation with me usually leads to G4 in some way. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Or Evil Dead. That's a topic of conversation I always fall into. Fair. How can you... No one can tell I'm a fan. You can't go to my profile right now and see Ash giving the finger as my banner on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, you're very subtle about it.
Super subtle. Oh, wow. No, but I wanted to just obviously ask you another question before we start to maybe start wrapping things up a bit. But the last questions I wanted to ask is about your time here on Gals of Geekdom. So basically the story goes is this Gals of Geekdom is a podcast that had obviously different people when it was conceived. It was conceived with me, Aaron, and Eva, and you know, they respectively had to leave the shows for various reasons, for own goals and stuff, and I felt that the show decided or needed to live on in some ways. I think we had a really cool name. We only got a few episodes in, and I felt like I could do something super special with it. So when coming up with this show, you know, to rebrand it and make it my own, I thought about you, obviously, Jazzy, because I knew you were a voice actress. I had just like really started talking with you, and I was just like, you know what? You'd be a perfect replacement for our show. Super queer, super fun, super geeky. And I am grateful that I asked you on, but I do want to ask you, what is your favorite part so far of being a part of the Gals of Geekdom and being one of the gals on our show?
I think the biggest thing is that it gives me something to do on Friday evening. So,
you know what? I'm with you there, too.
Yeah. I also enjoy the various guests we've had on the podcast, whether they be someone I've talked to before or someone that I've never met, someone whose work I've never heard of, which was the case with Tony in one episode, and then there mm-hmm. was Samantha Cook in the other episode. Neither of them I was familiar with the content they made, so.
I'm with you there. I didn't know Samantha as much, but I feel like we had some great conversations with them.
Right. So it was interesting getting to know them. Like, it was interesting getting to meet them and learn what they do, just by personally talking with them, which is not something I think most people can say. So,
right. I think what's cool is that since you didn't know, you didn't view the person that was coming on as, I guess, someone popular or someone you you didn't have that preconceived notion about who they were.
Right.
So I think that gave you an honest look into who they are as a person.
I do know the person, like with I didn't exactly know Kaylin, but I had talked to her a few times. I still like enjoyed the conversation with them, I think the episode with Kaylin especially was a very good one to do, and just because of the direction it all went.
Oh, I agree with you. I actually think so far, that might be the most proudest I've been of this, you know, new rebranded show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved how serious we got. We got really into it, and it was emotional.
Mm-hmm.
At least on my end. I definitely didn't have tears in my eyes.
So I guess I enjoy it in the same way I enjoy anything I do. In the same way one aspect I enjoy in my voice work is the fact that I get to meet people. And sometimes I don't realize these people have some popularity to them, which has also happened in my voice work. Because that animation I was recently in with the fucking sock, I didn't realize that guy had an audience, so...
That is amazing. I need to see this animation.
Yeah, I didn't realize this was someone who was well known for doing like different comedy skits and so forth. So, and that I was working with someone who had an audience, and that was so weird to find out today. So, like, I had people tagging me going, "You were in this guy's video," and I was like, "Yeah."
That's amazing. I'm going to watch that. I hadn't seen that yet today, but I'm going to watch that thing.
I hope you enjoy my obnoxiously high-pitched voice for that damn sock.
I'm sure I will.
Mm-hmm.
I love animation, so any chance I get to step in and see some of that stuff is always... Especially if I know the person involved, but that's like, even better.
I think the other funny one in this regard is that when I got cast in the shorts for the webcomic Gun Kitty, I didn't know a fucking thing about this comic. I certainly didn't know it had an audience when I went in, and I didn't know that it was primarily a furry fan base.
You learn a lot of things.
So when I voiced the character, the short release, and I learned about like the fact that this webcomic has kind of an audience to it, and it's kind of like a well-known furry webcomic, I was like, this is news to me. And I think I remember the director once asking me if I myself was a furry, and I'm like, no, but I'll voice the character.
Now you understand why.
People like the character, and I like voicing her, and I like getting the money for voicing her, so...
I don't blame you on that end, you know.
But yeah, it's always so funny to me when I voice in something and not realize there is an audience for it. Like sometimes I'll just voice in something, I'll do a, like someone will do a commission and maybe the project will come out, maybe nothing comes out of it. I don't know. Like,
right.
I just do my job, so.
Well, I'm glad you do your job and you do it well.
Mm-hmm. But like, again, it is always surprising when I find out like something I voice in has an audience. Or even if it does, even if it takes a bit for that audience to come in, because I remember early, the first role I had this year was a dub of a manga called Toki Doki. And it was a thing I voiced in that I enjoyed voicing in because my friend directed it, and it was kind of this heartbreaking story that he did as a dedication to his late father, who had died late last year. And so I was happy to voice for. I was happy to voice for him. That's one of the few projects I did for like no charge. I didn't really. I was like, I'll just do it.
Yeah.
And then like it came out. And at first it was kind of like small numbers, but then like recently it grew and I was like, when the fuck did this happen? Like a lot of people saw it and it was like, where the fuck did all these people come from?
Wow. That's incredible that a lot of people saw it and that you've gotten a chance to work with some incredibly talented and interesting people and that your work has led you to finding new people. I'm with you there. I love meeting new people, you know.
Absolutely. Like I've met professionals through the weirdest of circumstances. Like I did a small video review of an audio drama that I'm not even really involved in the production side called Megaton Girl, which is made by Austin Lee Matthews, who is a fairly well-known voice actor who got some popularity like over the last year due to his role in FF7 Remake.
Oh, okay, and
I did a short comedy review of his little radio play. Like, I just made it because it was just a dumb idea I had. And he fucking loved it and followed me, so.
Oh, that's so cool.
And we've talked quite a bit. We've talked a fair few times. He's a nice guy, so.
That is amazing. Got some interest. Twitter makes some interesting conversation happen, huh?
I think the funniest part of that one was Jason Marnoko, one of the voice actors in that radio play, followed me I think he followed me specifically because he mentioned I was one of the only people who, when mentioning his name in a review or something like that, I'm one of the few who pronounced his name correctly.
Oh, hey, that's a huge compliment, though, right?
And I just find that funny because it's like, oh my god.
Yeah, sometimes I'm glad you were able to pronounce his name correctly.
Well, if I'm not sure, I look it up, so.
This is true. Probably for the best. Yeah. So I guess centering this conversation back to gals, I am glad that you are enjoying your time here on the show. I'm glad that you were available and able to step up to be a part of, you know, this family that we have created. Yes, absolutely. And I am grateful to you for helping keep it alive because I really wanted to. And I feel like we found this magic bond that works and works well. We have fun. So,
hell yeah.
Yeah. And I think at this point, it might be best that we start to wrap up our show.
Okie dokie.
I know we had some technical difficulties in the meal as middle. Wow, meal. I'm tired. Jesus. Yeah. I will say if I'm going to tie this together metaphorically, this was like a nice meal.
Indeed. Nice save.
It was really nice.
You're cutting out a bit.
Yeah, sorry.
There we go.
We're having some more technical difficulties here.
Let's
in the middle
just
of this.
Wrap this up before this entire thing explodes.
That's gonna happen. All right. So, but thank you for listening to this very special episode of the Gals of Geekdom. We are all happy to have Jazzy here with us, who is incredible, and you should just go and follow everything that she does and check out all of her work and pay her money if you can, or pay her money to do voice acting gigs.
That'd be nice.
She deserves it. And tell the lovely... We need a name for our followers. We'll think of it. We'll work on it. We'll workshop it. But tell our lovely audience where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter at Lady Jazzington. You can also find me on Twitch under the same name. I stream every Monday and Thursday. Normally, I've been streaming Super Mario Galaxy, but this coming Monday, I'm going to be doing something special where I stream a recent visual novel I voiced in called Dreamcatcher Reflections, and I will be joined by a couple cast members, Multi Knights, who voiced the main character Riza, and Shakira Dunn, who voiced the character Shizune. You can also find me on YouTube at Jet. Under the name Jazzy Oliver. I mostly do shit posts on that channel. And one of them got inexplicably popular. Where the fuck do audiences come from?
They come from, I don't know, underground maybe?
Mm-hmm.
In a bunker? Alright, well, my name is Crystal Williams, and you can follow me on Twitter at CrystalWRocks. And I am also a writer, and you can look at my Medium. I do plan to write something for it in the near future, so that one's going to be cool. And currently I have an article that I've written for Gaily Dreadful, which is wrapping up the last week or so of its Pride Month release of articles, where it all goes to charity for the Transgender Law Center. So if you can... You can go check out my article over there. It's about how horror can be used as a coping mechanism, especially for queer people. But you can check out all the other articles there. And if you can, please donate. It's for a really good cause, especially, as you know, with all the barrage of anti-trans laws that have come out this last year. It's really crucial for you to support it, and possible in any way you can. But yeah, it's until next time. I am Crystal, one of your lovely hosts, and I have had a blast here with Jazzy. And next time when we do this sort of episode where it's just us or just little people, you know, like just a small group of or half the hosts or whatever, I hope to do that with Lizzie in the future so that we can have a Meet the Gals, Lizzie. So be on the lookout for that. This has been the special episode, and we love you all, and we will see you next time. Bye.
See yas.